and the value and the resale value and dealing and stuff like that, well, that's a whole other story.
Yeah, I mean, as long as you're an adult and you haven't had brain damage or anything, you're free to do what you want to do. One of the many problems, in addition to all that we've talked about with cryptocurrency and NFTs and smart contracts, is that there's very little regulation because it's a relatively new technology. And a lot of people aren't quite sure who the hell you sue, arrest, or charge. A lot of these people are anonymous, and a lot of these things cross the country lines. So people are, governments are sitting around twiddling their thumb trying to figure out how the hell they're going to deal with any of this. But, you know, little by little, millions of dollars are regularly stolen by hackers on bank exchange. I think last weekend, there was something like $190 billion of cryptocurrency lost in value. I haven't checked it in the last few days, but it's a highly speculative thing that ultimately has no real intrinsic value other than in how people value it themselves, and how they come to that conclusion is I don't have the faintest idea.
Sounds like hype, Roy.
Well, for the most part, as far as I'm concerned, it is a grift. It is a interesting concept a bunch of software engineers came up with, and it's being used by a whole bunch of people with dubious morals to squeeze money out of people who have too much money, apparently, and need to get rid of it. So although you'll see a lot of articles on this is the future, I don't think this is the future. I think this is the tulip sales. This is the past, personally. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. I tend to think it's a grift. There are people who agree with me. There are people who completely disagree. The New York Times had a nice review of the YouTube video that I linked on my link page. He thought it was very interesting. He's a true believer, though. And the best that he could give in the article was, well, people have made money. So we'll see how this settles out.
QSL. Well, you know, I guess it's really hard to make a dollar these days. You know, people are basically doing whatever they can. For those people, you know, who are able to earn a living, you know, maybe they don't need to play so much into this.
Well, you know, the beauty of a confidence operator is he benefits from the greed of other people. I would hope that the people who are wasting money on this have, to a degree, discretionary money, that this is not the rent money or the gas money or the food money that they're handing over for pictures of angry gorillas and such. So at least that's my hope for humanity.
Yeah, and then after all of this comes the metaverse.
Well, I don't know. I don't think Zuckerberg knows what people really want. I've seen the metaverse. I've seen kids who have much better virtual reality environments that they already play in that make snide comments about the metaverse. So I think the metaverse is sort of, I don't know, it's not even going to be probably as good as, you know, Facebook. You know, people of a certain age think everyone uses Facebook. I don't think people usually under the age of about 50 use Facebook anymore. I think it's more of a, you know, people 50 and above. I don't think the metaverse is going to take off because I don't think people in that age group are going to want to put a helmet on their head and go for a virtual cocktail party.
Well, the prefix meta, I'm not so sure what's so great about that anyway.
Well, you know, I mean, it's in a lot of buzzwords, metaphysical, and all kinds of wonderful things. It means other than. So, you know, it's a very vague, I guess they thought brand-friendly term. I don't think it's a good term. I think the guys at Facebook screwed it up again. You know, they got one thing right. They are optimizing Facebook for people being upset with each other, angry, and wanting to burn down each other's home. And they realize that by angering everyone, you get a lot of clicks and a lot of ad revenue. And so they're in it for the ad revenue, unfortunately, not for the betterment of mankind. Can you imagine the same capitalist nonsense going on to a virtual reality where every single square foot of your virtual reality is plastered with ads that Zuckerberg makes money off of? Talk about a hell on earth.
Well, Roy, I think that Facebook, people get way too personal on it.
Well, some do, some don't. There's a lot of very, very bad algorithms that present you with not very sane stories that people go down rabbit holes. I've heard more than a few people kind of captured by QAnon through excessive use of places like Facebook, and it's incredibly unfortunate. But yeah, I don't know. I was never a good big guy on social media. I don't TikTok. I don't Twitter. I don't Facebook. I don't know. It never appealed to me. I never quite understood the concept.
Comment.
Suddenly.
This is Kitty 2, UAH, Rocco Roy. To David's comment about Facebook, I agree, and it's very frightening because I go on it fairly, you know, frequently for work, but I notice there are people that ask these ridiculous questions about makes of cars and movies. You know, they seem very innocent, but people, you know, answer these questions, and I'm wondering if these are just other hucksters and fishers that try to get people's information. I don't know if there's an algorithm where they can store the stuff, but I think they look to gain information on people for identity theft purposes. Back to the net.
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the big things, they make money, Facebook in general makes money off of advertisements, but they also make a lot of money off of just information about you. They sell that information in all kinds of different ways, and they're I know in the past there were bots that collected that data because there was a big whoop-de-doo back in the previous 2016 election of organizations that were taking a lot of Facebook-related information and crunching it and using it for political purposes. So there's a lot of information being taken from you. Privacy is a thing of the past, unfortunately, and you got to be very, very cautious with anyone who contacts you or any of the bots or, you know, I mean, anyone who's even sat there and read through their mail. Every so often there are these weird little things that you hopefully know not to click. On my cell phone, almost every other day I get these people posing as my cellular carrier, congratulating me and offering me a link, which I never use. So we live in the Wild West as far as information age. And, you know, don't ever do anything that couldn't survive being posted on the library bulletin board, because otherwise it'll end up there in one way or another.
Okay, thank you, Roy. Back to the net. This is Katie 2, UAH.
Okay, very good, Rocco. Jim, I'm not sure if it was you. I think you threw out your call sign earlier tonight. If you have any comments, please feel free.
Thank you, Roy. Just a thought. Back to the Bitcoin thing. Sorry, this is a little rude, but from what your description of what I know of that type of thing, the cryptocurrency, it has as much legitimacy as a fart in the wind. And while it may have some practicality in lieu of a credit card or a checking account, the fact that it's being used as a savings account and an investment seems insane to me. The twist on that is our real money any better? I don't know. So, any thoughts on those thoughts? KD2VHD, over.
AC2GS. Yeah, I got a lot of thoughts. I think, although, in the old days, money was backed theoretically by actual things. A pound sterling is called a pound sterling because once upon a time it was an actual pound of sterling silver. Then they had coinage. So, a gold piece was theoretically the value of the gold in the gold piece. Then they moved to taking commodities completely off currency, and you were stuck with the goodwill of the country. So, when people all over the world hand dollars back and forth to each other, it's because they perceive the United States as the wealthiest country, reasonably the stable, one of the more stable countries, and that the government will back the value of the currency. With cryptocurrency, you have none of that. You have these shady guys who tweak the algorithms every 2 weeks and can change it overnight or can blow it up. You have miners in Kazakhstan who could take over the whole server and build a completely artificial, incorrect blockchain and give themselves all of the tokens. It's a mess. And you mentioned that it would be a good idea for credit cards. It would be a terrible idea for credit cards. Visa, let me drop for a second because I don't want to time out again. Okay, something like Bitcoin can do 7 operations a second. Visa, I think, does something like 5,000 operations a second. So you'd clog the system in the first 2 minutes, and it would go even worse. Credit cards can be reversed. If you make a payment and the guy welches, you can call up the bank and have it reversed. You can't have a cryptocurrency transaction reversed. So there's that. Then you got your checking book. How would you like to have it? Again, you'd have problems because the number of checks that everyone writes all over the world would completely blow up the servers. But even if they didn't, how would you like to have everyone be able to look at your checkbook balance and who you've spent, given money? Because these are public. The blockchain is a publicly available object. So your next-door neighbor, if they figure out what your blockchain is, they could look it up and see how you're spending your money for the last few years. I don't think you'd like that. I know I wouldn't.
So you think it's even stupider than I do. Thank you for your synopsis. I appreciate that. Thank you. KD2VHD, over.
But don't you guys make some money on it? How is that?
They're playing the last fool, and they're not the last fool. The trick is it's musical chairs. If the theory is correct, then everyone is playing last fool. All these guys are betting that there's some guy crazier than them who are willing to give them even more money. And in addition, there's a lot of people like that guy in India that we say is worth billions. He's worth billions in cryptocurrency that he can't really use because you can't buy anything with the cryptocurrency for the most part. You can just trade it back and forth with the other guys who will give you cash maybe. But, you can't go into a car dealership and buy a car with cryptocurrency. So these are limited. They're very valuable to a limited number of people. So but when they give you how much they're worth, they assume that these things are readily exchangeable en masse for money. If you own 99% of stock in something and you sell it, by the time you sell the last piece of stock, it's going to be very devalued. And that's with something that's worth something. So this is something that has no inherent worth except for what people believe it does. and you're holding 95% of Bitcoins are not being exchanged back and forth. They're sitting there in a big pile someplace. So, but they're factoring in those coins that can't quite be used as things of value that they own. Yes, Lou.
All right, I want to push back just a little bit. Granted, the Holland experiment with the flowers, you know, shows the greater fool theory. And that's happening with Bitcoin. But aside from that, the basics of it, and maybe I'm wearing my programmer hat and I'm being biased, but there's a couple things you said that I'm going to refute. One is that you said the hackers can change the ledger. And but you also said that once you make a transaction, you can't take it back. So you kind of, you can't have it both ways. The idea of the peer system is that you really can't change the ledger. Also, as far as your neighbor knowing what you have, I don't know how he gets your identification. It's anonymous. And as far as not being able to buy anything, I understood that Elon Musk was taking crypto for his Teslas back to net.
Okay. A lot of people and companies have said that they're going to take Bitcoins and Ethereums, and quietly they stopped doing it when they figured out that they got maybe about 100 people and it wasn't worth their trouble of setting things up. So you hear a lot of different places say, yeah, sure, we'll take Ethereum or Bitcoin, and then quietly they just forget about that. The block chains and such are not really anonymous. They're pseudonymous. I'm having problems pronouncing that word. But they're pseudonyms. So if you somehow figure out the pseudonym, a lot of weird people post them on Twitter and such. They take pictures of purchases and such. So it's difficult but not impossible. And also, I understand where it's confusing the way I said the blockchain per se, as long as you don't explode it, is not changeable. Once it makes an entry, the same things go with smart contract. We really didn't discuss smart contract. Cryptocurrency is sort of like an Excel sheet with authentication. A smart contract is an Excel sheet with the macros included. So it's a software program that actuates according to different factors automatically, and you can't rewrite the software. You can bomb the software and then rewrite it and enter it a second time. When I was talking about hackers, I was talking about big time. If for some reason the government of Kazakhstan wanted to blow up Bitcoin, they would, and they had 40% of the miners, they could assault the system and fork a new blockchain on the basis of them having 40% of the proof of work. Those are rather nuclear options. Hackers individually can only just steal your money at bank exchanges. They can't change the blockchain. So I didn't mean to give people the sense that that was what going on. But you can fork a blockchain. And Ethereum, I think, actually did fork it. So there's two Ethereum blockchains out there. But they meant to do that. But an attacker with enough mining capability can force that.
KD2FIU.
All right, let me respond first, George. All right. I think the figure is 51%. But the idea is that if it's global and dispersed enough, and there's enough out there, no one gets 51% because you're talking, billions or trillions. So that's the idea. But yeah, alrighty, back to that.
Okay, in the articles that I've read on this particular subject, somehow All you need is as little, although I understand why I would think 51 too, but apparently based on the people writing about this, with as little as 25% of the mining capability, you can trick it into kind of taking control and shifting the fork. Okay, George, you wanted to say something?
Yes, KD2FIU, we are people. And what value does it have to people? Let's go to the most wars fought in the world. The most wars that have been fought early times, and I'm not talking about number of people lost, were over water, food, land, all about the provisions that people need in life. Let me let it drop. I don't want to time this. A lot of people were lost in the 20th century, and the basis of the wars were really about energy, even starting in the early part of the 20th century. So it's about providing for people, in my mind. All right, if I'm going to invest, do I want to invest in a country that provides for people? Do I want to invest in land, water, resources? Or do I want to invest in additional computation that can be controlled by somebody else outside of the realm of the people who want the same thing as I do? So to me, investing is not just simply about money. It's about resources to help the human race exist. That's what we fought wars all about, all the time. So I'm going to invest in, okay, let's take my paper money, it's useless, and turn it into Bitcoin in a server. Let's take my land and throw it away and turn it into Bitcoin in a server. What have I just done with history? Back to you, Roy.
AC2GS. Well, George, ultimately, people invest as a way of making more money. And then the money translates into the commodities of life and the enjoyment thereof. So, and it's the perceived value. If you think you could sell me your $100 worth of bitcoins tomorrow or next week for $200, I think it would be reasonable for you to purchase the bitcoins if you really knew that I would do something foolish like that. So that's unfortunately what's going on. It's the perceived value and the perceived investment value. Even if you think the object itself is worthless to you, if you think that you could sell it to someone else for significant profit, it's reasonable to invest in that product that's useless for you.
So it is a scam.
Well, again, I would say it is. I understand, Lou's attitude. My inner coder really likes the idea. Hash codes are something that I've lived with. They're not new. They're the basis for a lot of the passwords that we use in computers all the time. The idea of the blockchain and the hash codes and all these things, even smart contracts, fascinate me. I really delight in, again, it's more of how things work than are they worthwhile existing, if you will. So I can appreciate that in one part of my brain, but the part where it's of no actual intrinsic value scares the heck out of my economic brain. So I would agree with you, it's a scam. There are others that don't. I understand there's something on the order of about 100,000 people who actively play with crypto coins all over the place, buying, selling, changing from one to the other, and all kinds of things. You could even sell short. So I understand that that's the thing, and I think in some places it's going to grow bigger. I think it's going to be more of a problem with younger people who kind of don't like authority. They see banks and such as authorities, but ultimately all these cryptocurrencies, as I said, are generally very centralized for a decentralized form of currency. So I don't really see it what the promises were fulfilled. But I understand being intrigued by the underlying technology, and I feel that as well. I'm just not going to give them a penny of my money.
PhD.
Yes, Jim.
KD2FIU, can I finish some, please?
Coming from similar conclusions. I mean, I think most of us that are talking tonight are coming from very different places in our base suppositions of the world. But the results we're coming to sound very, very similar. And they also point to a need that's unaddressed. Very interesting conversation. Thank you, KD2VHT.
Thank you, Jim. I'll let you go with George in just a few seconds. I think if we were talking to a somewhat different demographic audience, nothing personal, guys. I'm of the age as well. I think the average age of people sitting there listening are their mid-60s. I mean, there are a couple of guys, you know, who are 30 or 25, but most of them around, 50 to 70 or so. If we were talking to a bunch of guys 20 to 35, we would probably have a different blend and different mix of opinions. This is clearly something that tends to fascinate younger generations than us, But, George, please, I'm sorry for the interruption.
Oh, no, Roy, go on. Yes. The thing is, I heard this morning listening to Rick Edelman, and I'm not going to be bashing. As a matter of fact, I totally support most of the advice he's given over the years. 26% of the investors under 40 years old are into cryptocurrency. It's about time you start thinking of it. And let me go back to what I was saying. What does it have to do with supporting life? You invest in supporting life. I don't care. If you want to buy an electric car, then invest in batteries. Invest in wires. Invest in anything. I don't understand what it means to invest in cryptocurrency, other than the fact that you think it's going to make more value. In reality, value of what? I don't get it. And I'm going to ask Roy, through you, I'm asking anybody out there, what value are you getting from this? What value are you doing for humanity, yourself, whatever? Does it feed? Does it house? Does it give water? Does it give transportation? Does it do anything? No. I'm investing in dollars. I'm investing in property. Okay. They have value. The dollars are with the U.S. government's economy. The U.S. government's economy, which I trust more than servers.
And Y2H.
Yes, Lou.
Okay. I don't think there's such a thing as
Bitcoin or crypto being an investment. It's a speculation, a pure speculation, and a dangerous one. I do not invest in it. Now, talk about demographic. I'm 73. But, you know, again, like you, Roy, I'm interested in the mechanics of it. There are some positives, but the implementation right now, you know, isn't there. But, I it's something that the positives, is, you know, I would say are the anonymity, depending on your point of view. If you're a money launderer, I guess it's an attractive thing. I don't know. That's why the country's a little concerned. They want to get to it. But people invest in foreign exchange, so they'll buy, francs or, you know, Swiss francs in exchange for, say, American dollars. And those things generally go up and down. But again, as George says, there's a country in back of it. But it's full faith and credit of the United States. And that's why people accept the dollar. So I would not, I stay away from crypto, frankly, because first of all, it's inflated. There's, you know, it's a bubble, so I stay away from bubbles. But other than that, there, you know, I just, for the record, you know, you can't knock some of the things in the structure of it that that do have some worth, at least for consideration. But I would never invest. It's not an investment. It's a speculation and a highly dangerous one at that, I would say.
AC2GS. I agree entirely, Lou. I think it's all fascinating. I think the white paper was great. It was really interesting. I think the problem is implementing it is not great. Can it be fixed? I don't think so. I think there is some inherent underlying human nature flaws with it, and as you mentioned, it's as far as I can perceive, it is just kind of gambling. People who are interested in gambling of a certain age will go to Atlantic City or Las Vegas or wherever. When you're 20 years old and you're sitting in front of a computer all day, then a couple of extra clicks and you're betting on Bitcoin. You know, if you don't want inflated coin, cryptocurrency, there are cryptocurrency out there that I think each token is worth something like 0.00000000000003 cents. So you can find very uninflated, worthless crypto coins as well as overinflated, worthless crypto coins. But, I would be incredibly surprised if someone popped up on this particular net and say that they play around in Ethereum or even some of the lesser-known, lower-priced cryptocurrencies. I think if you went to something like Twitch, which is a kind of a gamer streaming service where the demographics is somewhere around 25, you'd probably get a lot more hits. But you get a lot of other guys who really hate the whole concept because they've been promoted up, down, and sideways. A lot of these younger people endlessly get NFT offers. Some of them in which they try to bribe them, some which they try to fool them.
KD2FIU?
Yes, George.
Yeah, it's like the old Jobs become a barber, people always need haircuts. Become a shoemaker, people always need their shoes fixed. And that's an older one, and it's not around anymore. But my take on it is invest in what society and humanity needs. Do we need the existence of values sitting in servers or drives? That does not provide for the growth of population in humanity. And if you really want value, that's where you go. You provide housing, you provide food, you provide water, you provide transportation. All of this has so many sub some businesses associated with that, but it's humanity that needs to grow, not just the way I see it is, it could be easily stolen on the international market, meaning the crypto coins.
KG2RY.
Yes, David.
Tell me if I'm correct or incorrect. I think it was a few weeks ago, maybe months, a couple of months ago, one of the Far East countries adopted Bitcoin as one of the currencies that they accept and use for trade. Was it the Philippines or Indonesia or something like that?
I believe it was Peru. It was a small central South American country. But you have to take that with a grain of salt. Again, a lot of different people and companies and countries have sort of made announcements that they were going to do these things, and usually they walk it back. If you ever go through website after website, the Google searching, all these different people and places that say that they'll accept them, because the number of people who actually use them for exchange for value are very, very small, and it's usually very difficult to manipulate the transactions. They're not very simple. It's not really designed for that yet, and it has that limitation. You know, when you do an exchange using most of the cryptocurrencies, there's can be a long delay in having that go through, and occasionally gets lost.
KD2WOT.
Yes, Chris.
Yeah, just a comment. Yeah, it was El Salvador made it their official currency.
Yes, indeed, El Salvador. But I would take that with a couple of grains of salt. I mean, think of it. El Salvador, how many people living in El Salvador even have computers? I mean, how are they going to transfer their bitcoins to and fro? It strikes me as a somewhat logistics problem.
Well, if they have coins, right? Actual coins. And it's like foreign money, you know, the price goes up and the price goes down.
KD2WOT. No, like when you see those pictures, you know, that they show on the financial networks and stuff of a Bitcoin, I mean, there is no actual coin, you know, Bitcoin coin.
Yes, indeed. There is no actual coin. They do the imagery because people's brains work better that way. All you're talking about is an Excel sheet. It's a hopefully decentralized Excel sheet with just your account and how many coins you have, and if you're going to send them to someone, where they're going to. That's all they are. They're purely digital. They don't exist in any physical form other than the magnetic fields of the server's hard drives.
KD2FIU.
Yes, George?
I don't know much about El Salvador, but I'm willing to believe that their economy is not really able to provide for their people. So what it's telling me here is that the value of their internal exchange is very low to begin with.
Okay, that's a good possibility. I don't think they're in particularly good condition. But, you know, there's a lot of countries that are not terribly, their currency isn't backed by anything particularly great, and it's been devalued and such. But again, I don't see the average person living in El Salvador buying a loaf of bread with a cell phone and a cryptocurrency application. So I'm not quite sure what the implementation, if it actually comes to pass, will really be for them. I tend to think it's more public relations. There are people out there who will ask people to put a sticker that say bitcoins on cash registers all over the place without actually taking bitcoins, just because they want the public relations boost. You know, if you think that you could go to your 7-Eleven and spend bitcoins for some reason, then they feel that the price, the value of the bitcoin will actually increase even more. So there's a lot of public relations announcements. There's a lot of companies that say they're going to invest, you know, $100 million on development of the next great blockchain. You know, sometimes I guess they do it. Sometimes I guess they don't really do it, but they like the publicity. So there's a lot of public relations buzz that has nothing to do with reality.
Roy, how do we cash them in? How do we spend them? I missed this probably in the early part of the discussion here. If I did, please give me a brief synopsis on how do we cash it in? How do we spend it?
Certainly. There are different agencies. One is, it depends on the coin, the cryptocurrency. There's I think, a couple of hundred different cryptocurrencies out there. The one that everyone talks about, the one with the best value, the greatest value, is Bitcoin. The second is probably Ethereum. And then there's a whole bunch of others that go down in price to minuscule fractions of a penny. It's very difficult to do anything directly with that blockchain. So what you usually go to something called an exchange, which is sort of like a web-based bank. The web-based bank will take your money from credit card withdrawals and then as a service provided will buy a cryptocurrency of your choice, or they will take the cryptocurrency you have and trade it for other cryptocurrency at the exchange rate with a service fee attached to it. So these banks make life a lot easier for individuals to exchange these things, but they're also an extra risk, because if a hacker could hack into the exchanges themselves are not as secure as the blockchain. So people can hack the bank exchanges, which have your password on it, and can steal your money out from under itself. And it has repeatedly had that happen. Different exchange banks websites have gone bankrupt because hackers have basically bled it dry.
KT2R1.
Okay, wait a minute. So is this a different clearinghouse base that we have for our currency between our banks in the United States, the automated clearinghouse?
Well, no. That's another unfortunate problem with a lot of these things. A lot of these organizations aren't regulated correctly. A lot of these things qualify as unregulated securities, which usually lands a lot of these people in jail for many years. One of the first bank exchanges was called, I think, Mt. Go. The only interface they have with the real currency is a credit card connection, which sometimes they lose. More than a few times, credit card companies lock them out, so that after a while, they only had their own cash to play with. They couldn't withdraw any cash, and they usually ended up going down. So it's not connected to the world currency market directly. It's very indirect, and there are very few to no regulations followed, although there's a lot of regulations on just unregulated securities that don't discuss cryptocurrency because the laws are too old.
Thank you, Roy, and thanks for giving me the time to bring in the questions, and Thanks for the discussion. I'll pass it on. KD2FIU.
BHD.
Okay, I think David was first, and then we'll get to you, Jim.
QSL. There is no insurance. There is no insurance on cryptocurrency. So if there is a hacker, you know, the money is not protected.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, there have been, you know, I think it was a month or two ago, some bank exchange lost $25 million worth of cryptocurrency, of people's cryptocurrency. So, yeah, there's no insurance. What sometimes happens are the bank exchanges get together and try and pay off if the loss isn't too high for the betterment of the whole system. They'll pay off small losses, or they'll pay off percentages of small losses. But it's a big problem, yeah.
Let's say I want to create this company, these speculative interactions, transactions, and I want to be the one to set it up. Do I have the ability to increase the value of these so-called products? And also, am I in a position to gain a lot from it?
Well, it depends. You pretty much kind of stuck with the price point that's generally agreed on, because people work computers. So if they go to your bank exchange and you're charging $10 for a coin, and another bank is charging $5 for the coin, you'll never see any profits. So ultimately what happens is you peg the currency through the general population the community is willing to spend, and then you put a service fee on it. So you can't really, I mean, you could set value if you wanted to, but it would probably either lead to you losing a lot of money or losing a lot of business if you didn't kind of tack it to the same common range that everyone else is buying and selling it as. Theoretically, you could make a lot of money. What unfortunately tends to happen, once again, is you don't put enough effort in the developer making it hack-proof, so people start to attack it. You start to bleed money. Then if you tell people you're bleeding money, it annoys them because they want to know where their money is coming from, so you lie to them, which makes it even worse, which means that you probably end up losing even more money. And then you kind of get to that point that either you rob the rest of your customers blind and take off for Panama, or you spend a significant amount of your future time in a prison cell.
Price differences will be arbitrage.
Yeah, like currency itself is arbitraged. And there are people who made a lot of money on arbitrage. About a year or two ago, I did a story that there were some people interested in setting up, instead of the fiber optic communications between the United States and Europe, that they were going to try and finagle a direct RF link, because they felt that the RF link would have a slight latency benefit to the repeaters with the optical cables. That slight difference in time would be enough to slice a lot of profit out of arbitrage. So arbitrage is one of those things that people do to make a lot of money that doesn't really help anyone. It doesn't improve anyone's lot in life except the guy smart enough to figure out how to arbitrage it correctly.
KD2FIU.
It's discovery, so it has a useful purpose. Send way to it.
Well, I don't know if it has a useful purpose. I mean, it sets prices more efficiently across the world. But I think if it didn't exist, or if the time delay wasn't quite you know, long or short, and some people had a better chance of making the profit. If it got spread around, I think things would be not that bad for the general public, just the guys who figured a faster way to make a profit off of arbitrage. George, you wanted to say something.
Cat 7, Transatlantic Telecommunications Cable Number 7, abandoned in 1990, an RF link between New Jersey and Land's End, England, that AT&T and BTI had put together. It was their last and seventh of the ones because they were far too costly to maintain.
Which, the RF link or the Category 7?
No, the name of the cable was TAT-7, and it was RF, and it was under the ocean, and it was far too, it was far too expensive to maintain.
Okay, the article that I read a couple of years ago on the TechNet was not a RF cable. It was a Skywave RF signal that was supposed to link the two continents. I don't think they ever got it off the ground, but it was just a suggestion someone had that they thought that they would be able to get a shorter latency period. And anything that gives you a shorter latency period, it gives you a slight edge on things like arbitrage.
And Y2H.
KD2FIU.
Yes, Lou.
Okay, I think we're mixing up arbitrage and front ending. Front ending is when you can get in before the other guy because of speed. But arbitrage is simply a way to bring prices closer together so that you don't have, let's say, a Bitcoin or whatever. It could be a commodity, you know, corn, a bushel of corn in one area priced a lot differently than another area. So the guy goes into the area where it's cheap, he buys it. He sells it in the other area, and by these actions, the prices are getting closer and closer together in the two different areas, and classical arbitrage. So I wouldn't soil the arbitrage with front-ending and, you know, nefarious things. I think arbitrage has a legitimate place in economics.
I don't know. I wouldn't call it nefarious. I would just it's a technological benefit. If you could get the information faster, you could make the deals before anyone else, and it's been a never-ending battle for many years of getting the information across to the proper people as quickly as possible. If you design the hardware, if you design the software, a lot of these companies will automate operations and such, and I don't think it's nefarious. It's not really cheating. It's just people using technology better than the next guy for the time being. If you make the extra money rather than the next guy, it's not going to really improve society. It just society will go on and it'll improve your life more than the other guy who has the slower latency problems. That's all.
All right. Again, that's front-ending. That's a different phenomenon. That's that whole speed thing, you know, flash trading and all that. But arbitrage is a more general technique, and it doesn't necessarily, without it, okay, let's put it this way. Without it, without people jumping into arbitrage, you will have various prices in various markets. You'll have an imbalance in the system. So you keep bringing it back to the front end, you know, front loading or getting ahead of the other guy. I'm not talking about that. This could be done on a very slow time basis, but it has value because it's price discovery. It's assigning based on supply and demand the true price of say a commodity.
KD2FIU.
Okay, George recognized. I don't want to have a semantic argument with you with this thing. I don't think there's anything particularly wrong in getting information faster than the next guy if you don't break any laws. I have the sense, and maybe I'm wrong, that arbitrage also benefits from short latencies. But I don't think it's enough to warrant a disagreement.
I can see it as two different things, the apples and oranges, you know, the front loading or the speed thing and arbitrage in general. That might be a form of arbitrage, but arbitrage is much more general than that particular instance. I think, anyway, maybe I'm wrong. That's my 2 cents, which inflation is 4 cents.
Okay, well, maybe we'll take it up again when the economy net starts up at 12:06. George, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, thank you, Roy. And Lou, yeah, much more than the almost 6% that we were just afforded, which was eaten up even before the first check was written. But if we're talking about corn and apples and oranges, even if you're buying it in the most timely sense, electronically, on the net, even if you're buying it in the most timely sense in the business world, what gets to the East Coast more quickly? Now we're dealing with a transportation world. Is corn more available from Kansas than it is in Middle California? Is the apples available from Northwestern New York State more available than they are from Washington State? We're talking about transportation costs. And we pay more because of the transportation cost. The oranges, the nectarines, whatever it is that's coming from Florida, do we have them better if they're coming in the summer from Western Pennsylvania? So also air transportation in there. A lot of what the business can do with electronics doesn't always benefit us. Sometimes it benefits them. KD2FYU.
Okay. Jim, I think you had something you wanted to say.
Thank you, Roy. Acknowledging I am a man with a stick in a room full of swords, this is over my head in a lot of ways. Can I suggest that it's possible that it's really hard to have this conversation without a common definition or understanding of even what money or currency is? And I don't believe we're all on the same page, either on this forum or any forum. So your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, if we were having this discussion in an assembly with a bunch of economists and such and blackboards and promising to give people a degree in the subject, I would agree with you completely. We kind of went this way and that way. Just because Rich is very interested, W2BZ, in the subject, and lately in his conversations with me, I've grown somewhat interested, and you might notice I picked up a couple of aspects of what this stuff is. So I just wanted to share it in general. I don't think anyone should perceive this as a intro to economy course or anything even vaguely similar.
Fair enough. I appreciate that it's here. It's nice to hear some input.
Roy?
Yes, George.
It's the output of society to grow and support itself.
Well, hopefully it grows. Unfortunately, there are some times where it gets less. There are high points, there are low points. The beauty of economy is that it's not a zero-sum game. If anyone's kind of read through game theory, fascinating subject in and of itself. I had a professor give me a course in it way back in my college years. So the idea is that actual total value of the world does increase over time, although some people are very suspicious about that. They think that's sort of magic. So, yeah, the idea is to increase the general value within the world, and hopefully most members of the world can share it.
Sounds a bit esoteric to me. I have a simpler definition than my own story that might shine some light on this for all of us.
Okay, Jim, please.
So in my house, I have this aluminum container. It holds about a gallon of liquid. It has a tight fit.